From WNYC in New York, this is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield. A disease is in the news.
Tonight, the mysterious disease causing international anxiety.
The Zika virus is spreading rapidly through the Americas, and that's left researchers scrambling.
That experts say is spreading explosively, could infect as many as 4 million people in the Americas in the next year. 4 million. It seems not so long ago that another foreign pathogen was threatening U.S. shores, prompting media hyperbole and anxiety.
You may have long since stopped worrying about Ebola. Are you ready for Zika?
Probably not, but here are the basics. Zika is a mosquito-borne illness spread primarily by the Aedes aegypti mosquito found across the world, including throughout the southern United States. While the symptoms are relatively mild, the virus has inspired horror because of its observed but not yet confirmed association with microcephaly, babies born with underdeveloped brains, notably in Brazil. Also unproved but observed, ties to Guillain-Barré syndrome, a sudden paralysis. These potential effects prompted the World Health Organization to declare Zika a global health emergency. Countries across Latin America advised women to avoid pregnancy, and President Obama requested $1.8 billion in funds to confront the virus.
But how much should we worry about Zika? How clear are the links between the virus and microcephaly? What can Zika tell us about future outbreaks? We're going to spend the rest of the show wading through the Zika waters. Jonathan Katz was in Haiti last month when he began to show symptoms. He wrote, "Reporting on Zika when you have Zika," for the latest issue of the New York Times Magazine. Jonathan, welcome back to On the Media.
Thanks for having me again.
So, you're not a pregnant woman. For you, Zika was not a medical emergency.
No, not at all. Mostly, I just felt run down. It was a little distressing to look in the mirror and see the rash all over my face and chest and stuff. If you compare it to other mosquito-borne diseases like chikungunya, where it becomes so painful that, like, you can't even walk, you can't touch things because, like, your hands hurt so much, it was nothing like that.
Chikungunya, dengue, which I think you've had, right?
Yeah, I had dengue.
Way worse.
Oh, yeah. No, dengue was awful. And if you get it a second time, it can kill you because you can develop dengue hemorrhagic fever. So stay away from dengue. That's really, really bad.
Okay, so there's that. Malaria, Zika, all covered by mosquitoes. You know this very well. How did you get bit?
I don't know. I didn't get the license plate number of the one that got me before it
but
flew
up. But
what
did you do to avoid it?
Well, I was doing everything that I could. I was wearing permethrin-treated clothes, long pants, and generally a long shirt if I was going to go out late in the day. We had a permethrin-treated bed net. Permethrin is basically like a super toxic insect repellent that you use to soak through your clothes and stuff. And you wear serious bug spray when you're in a place like that, you know, like at least 30% DEET, but we also have like 100% DEET that I kind of hate because it just sort of burns.
So it's not an easy problem to fix. The public health minister of Haiti announced in mid-January that there were 6 confirmed cases of Zika. 2 weeks later, the official tally of suspected cases was at 125. You wrote that, unofficially at least, it's everywhere.
Yeah, it was everywhere. When they were saying there were like 6 confirmed cases, I was like, well, I know all 6 of them, I think. So
we had some coverage of Zika in the U.S., and it sounded a little like this.
Virginia now has 1 confirmed case of a deadly disease spread by mosquitoes.
A dangerous virus spreading. Could it reach Northeast Ohio? We go to the experts.
Massachusetts has its first case of the Zika virus. A Boston man diagnosed.
That did sound really exciting. And if I didn't know what Zika was, and I basically didn't have it at the moment that that was happening, if that was the first that I'd heard of it, I would have been like, this sounds like a horror movie. Now, just to be clear, I think that it's really a good idea to err on the side of caution. But the issue is that, you know, in a lot of those places, for instance, in Boston, the radio comes on and they tell people that there's a guy who's sick with Zika in Boston. Like, that really doesn't matter. Because, first of all, there are never Aedes aegypti mosquitoes in Boston. Second of all, it's the middle of winter. So you're not going to get bit. And even if one person has Zika in the Boston area, the odds of them being able to have it transmitted from them to a mosquito to anybody else are basically nil. So What are you communicating when you report the news like that? What are you actually telling people?
How do you think the average American should react to the information that they're getting, or local or state government?
So this is a really hard problem. It comes in when you're talking about preparedness for disease, but it also comes in when you're talking about earthquakes and hurricanes, you know, just all sorts of things. And oftentimes people will only start paying attention to something when they freak out about it. But then this leads to another problem, which is that not everything that you prepare for is going to happen to you, but you always need to prepare. The way that human nature seems to work is that if you tell people to prepare for something and then it doesn't happen, you do end up with a little bit of this boy that cried wolf syndrome.
Now, in the case of the Zika virus, that mosquito isn't going to find its way to Boston, but it could find its way to Puerto Rico, Texas, Florida. Don't you think they need a little cattle prod of fear, maybe?
There are some common sense things that you can do to try to prevent yourself from getting Zika if you live in an area that is going to be affected. State and local governments or national governments in places like Haiti or the Dominican Republic, they can go on mosquito eradication campaigns. They can make sure that there isn't a bunch of standing water around for the Aedes aegypti mosquitoes to breed in, stuff like that. Scaring people just for its own sake doesn't really accomplish anything. And the more dramatic and the more dire that you make it sound, the worse that sort of boy that cried wolf syndrome is going to get afterward.
Let's talk about the fact that Zika seems to have gotten people talking about mosquito control. 500 million people contract malaria a year. Maybe 2.5 million of them die each year. 22,000 die from dengue each year. But it's taken Zika to get people to focus on mosquito control. Why?
First of all, the idea that this can harm your baby before your baby is born, that gets people's attention. That's every parent's worst nightmare. But I think the biggest thing that's going on is that this is a disease that is in the same hemisphere as the United States, in areas that are close to the United States, and it is happening on the heels of a number of other epidemics that have gotten the attention of people in the United States. And the thing that you have to keep in mind is, yeah, 500 million people are infected with various forms of malaria a year, but the 500 million people tend to be poor and tend to live in countries that don't have a lot of power. If there was rampant malaria in the United States or Western Europe, we would be moving heaven and earth to cure malaria. If you look back at the Ebola epidemic, Americans only started caring once, you know, the first patients with Ebola were being brought to the CDC in Atlanta. And if you remember, there were news helicopters literally chasing the ambulance, live footage of the patient being taken out of the back of the ambulance. And Sanjay Gupta, you know, on the air, very seriously discussing what this all meant in capital letters.
And wild overreaction by several governors.
Oh, yes. And none of it had anything to do with what was actually happening in West Africa. Ebola, and I think Zika as well, sort of entered the American political sphere in terms of how the United States relates to the rest of the world. If you're the sort of person that wants to, I don't know, build a giant wall across the border with Mexico and make Mexico pay for it, then you are going to regard these diseases as another form of foreign invasion. And it provided an opportunity for people like Chris Christie, the governor of New Jersey, to grandstand and detain a nurse whose crime was having gone over to West Africa to help people who had Ebola, keep her in quarantine, even though there didn't seem to be any actual reason to do so. Frankly, even if there is a strong possibility that a disease that crops up somewhere overseas could spread and get here, one of the important preventative things is to work together internationally to try to address the systemic roots of poverty so that we can prevent those diseases from cropping up anywhere. There are lots and lots of threats. And it's really better to nip them in the bud.
Lots and lots of threats.
Yes.
So what's the message we should, as members of the media, be sending? How do we deal with this?
I think you have to say what you know. You have to say what you don't know. And then also keep in mind the bigger picture. I mean, Zika is a disease that, as far as we know, is new to the Western Hemisphere. But this seems to now be happening every couple of years. Chikungunya did the same thing in 2014 when it showed up. Once it got to the area that the Aedes aegypti mosquito is in, it spread like wildfire and everybody was affected everywhere. As the planet continues to get warmer, the range of this particular mosquito and other mosquitoes is going to expand, and more areas are going to be affected by mosquito-borne diseases than were in the past.
Jonathan, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Jonathan Katz wrote about having Zika while reporting on it for the New York Times Magazine this weekend. He's also the author of The Big Truck That Went By, How the World Came to Save Haiti and Left Behind a Disaster. And he's a writer in residence at Duke University.